Dave, remember the feeling of watching Saturday morning cartoons with your favorite bowl of sugary cereal?
Sure.
Well, what if I told you that you could recapture that feeling, but without the guilt of eating cereal that's bad for you?
I'd say you must be talking about Magic Spoon.
That's right, Dave. And now you can get a variety pack with four featured flavors, cocoa, fruity, frosted, and peanut butter. This pack has 0 grams of sugar, 13 to 14 grams of protein, and only 4 net grams of carbs. Each serving is only 140 calories. They're keto-friendly, gluten-free, grain-free, soy-free, and low-carb.
My favorite flavor is the frosted.
Spice up your peanut butter cereal by slicing up some fresh banana in it. That's what I did.
Go to magicspoon.com/AIC to grab a variety pack and try it today. And be sure to use our promo code AIC at checkout to save $5 off your order. And Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked.
Remember, get your next delicious bowl of guilt-free cereal at magicspoon.com/AIC and use the code AIC to save $5.
Thank you, Magic Spoon, for sponsoring this episode.
Are you ready, kids? Get your parents' permission, check your mailbox, and grab your shopping cart. It's time for the Adventures in Collecting podcast.
I'm Eric.
And I'm Dave.
Welcome to Adventures in collecting,
where we talk toy news, culture, and hauls,
along with our journeys as collectors.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Adventures in Collecting.
Hi.
Dave, we're back.
We are.
So I'm trying to think. It's always interesting coming off of, like, we had the G.I. Joe team, and then we had our news break. We had our AIC 120.
We took a detour to Sweet Sweet.
That's right. And we did our first in-person event since, what was that, Toy Fair 2020? I think.
Yes.
Yeah. February of 2020. Really great to be, with other people, put some faces to some of the names and people behind the emails that we've been, going back and forth with over the last few years.
It's amazing though. Like, just to see the talking toy shiz logo, it was unreal.
Yeah. He looks just like he does in all the videos. It's uncanny.
It's his logo.
Yeah. It's crazy. So we're coming up on a big week for toy news, as this episode will be airing as San Diego Comic-Con kicks off. We are not going to that in person this time. We make no promises for future years, but we can confirm that we won't be at San Diego Comic-Con this year.
But maybe we'll see you in New York.
Yeah, yeah. But
in general, not just at Comic-Con. Because we're, local to here. So.
I mean, yeah, we are pretty close. So you might see us in New York.
You might. But you may also see us at New York Comic Con.
Well, actually, if you're listening to this, well, actually, that'll be in the past, too. Because we'll have attended Toy Pizza Con right before this episode comes out. So,
New York.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about.
So, just coming out of Sweet Sweet and, with San Diego Comic-Con on the horizon, it's all about new things, right? We're talking all about new toys, what's coming down the pipeline and showcasing, like we usually do, the latest and greatest. And today's episode brings us to a very specific part of the toy collecting and toy photography and toy display world. Accessories help bring action figures to life, and they enhance play. Whether that means giving toys jetpacks and blasters for imaginative adventures, screen-accurate props and munitions for display and photography, or in the case of today's guest, weapons and blood effects so they can look like they're beating the snot out of each other. It's really no wonder that accessories really make
the toy these days. So joining us today is Greg, better known as at Super Action Stuff. Greg, welcome to Adventures in Collecting.
Hey, Eric. Thank you. Glad to be a guest on the pod. Dave, thank you as well.
Happy to have you here.
So, you know, we're big fans. You know, I've used a bunch of your accessories in photographs over the years. You know, I picked up a set of your wares from local toy shop, Chubsy Wubsy Toys. And they're awesome. Absolutely love them. So, you know, excited to kind of meet the person behind them and, you know, also and learn about how you're making these.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, that's the most fun part of it, to see people use the accessories in their toy photography and come up with weird different ways that I never imagined they would use them.
Well, before we get into the bulk of that and, you know, the actual creation process, as this is a show about collecting, the first question we ask all of our guests, what are you currently collecting?
That's great, and it's definitely part of my overall toy journey. Like, I've collected action figures like since I was a kid. I definitely had a phase where I stopped, you know, when I was trying to be a grown up for a little bit, but then it pulled me back in. So, I mean, my first, I guess, line that pulled me back into action figure collecting was Marvel Legends. That was like in the Toy Biz era, and I pretty much got all of those at the time. Today. I still collect Legends, but I'm a little bit more selective. They've kind of got all the characters that I've wanted to collect. So it's, you know, it's usually a couple movie figures here or there, or any upgrades for characters that I really like. Otherwise, you know, Mezco is something I collect a lot. Rumble Society, their 112 collective is just excellent when you're talking about 6-inch figures with soft goods. Black Series, I'll pick up a few every once in a while, but they're sometimes disappointing. But, you know, every once in a while they have a great one. G.I. Joe Classified, you know, I know you spoke with the Joe team in one of the earlier pods, it's probably one of the best like mass market lines right now in terms of kind of quality and what they, you know, the value that they put in each figure. I think they're doing a really bang up job there. That's one line this year I'm really enjoying. I'll pick up the occasional like figure arts or Mafex. Mythic Legions, I'll pick up some interesting ones here or there. I think Valorverse is doing some really interesting stuff. I throw them to my line. And then like a couple of fun ones like Plunderlings. I think Plunderlings is a great company. They have a really excellent design, and they're trying and doing some interesting looking things these days, and just, you know, I think adding something very, very interesting to the toy community. Like Fortnite. I don't play Fortnite at all, but I think some of the character designs are hilarious. So even though I know nothing about them, I'm like, it's a big muscle cat. It's a chicken. It's banana. It's just fun stuff, I think. I'll pick up the occasional like Storm Collectibles, like a Goro or a Zangief, like those big figures. I kind of pick and choose everything, but Legends is usually my core, and then Rumble Society, Black Series, and a few others. I'll pick up whatever kind of is interesting looking at the time.
So because of what you do and, you know, what you make, do you find that, you know, you're a little more open to, you know, other things that kind of, you know, tiptoe around that 112 scale just to see how they, you know, interact with the accessories that you've made already, or, you know, kind of inform the design of future accessories?
Yeah, I mean, that's I definitely look at what are people collecting, and I kind of need to work. Like, scales have been kind of getting a little bit larger in the past couple of years. So I think with Legends, it was like maybe 6.25, and they're getting taller. They're kind of growing up like a human, and they're getting to like 6.5 inches, a little bit bulkier. Like, you can compare Legends today with the ones that Hasbro was making like four or five years ago. So everything's getting a little bit bigger, and you have figures that are just in 7-inch scale. So I have to kind of work within that medium to try to cover as much audience as possible, because, you know, if you make things that don't really scale very well, that's one of the challenges. with the audience. You want to make sure that kind of fits with the majority of collectors out there.
So how did you land on the name Super Action Stuff and the 1/12 scale?
Yeah, so I don't exactly recall how I came up with the name. Like, I was going for something very generic. The whole idea was I kind of noticed that toys were gravitating to, like, 6-inch scale. I think this is when I first was thinking of this idea. There was, like, 3¾-inch, 5-inch scale was a thing. And then I just started seeing, like, Black Series was doing really well with Star Wars, and Hasbro seemed to be gravitating more to, like, let's do everything 6-inch. They had just quit on doing, like, 3¾-inch Marvel Universe. And G.I. Joe 3¾ was pretty much done. It was dead at retail. Like, even Funko was getting into 6-inch figures. Mezco was getting into it. And NECA and McFarlane were getting into 6-7-inch scale as well. So I saw people kind of gravitating there, and I just looked at, like, kind of fan community groups. I'm like, what if I created accessories that, you know, my first product was a foodie set. So it was like tacos and beer and like a little cell phone. So I saw, like, people around my office, they had action figures at their desk. And I was just like, wouldn't you want to have, you know, instead of just like Tony Stark sitting there, have him drinking a beer, or having him, like, eating tacos, or Spider-Man eating tacos or a hot dog. That was kind of my first idea. I thought these would be, like, good accessories to kind of add into people's collections, make things a little more fun, use them in toy photography. So I kind of gravitated towards 1/12 scale just because I thought that was where things were going these days, and that's where you can have the largest number of the largest audience that I could sell to.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of those things where, like, you know, I remember when I first got I forget what build the figure wave it was in, but the Deadpool that actually came with a taco. And thinking, like, man, I really wished more action figures came with food.
You know? I think I knew, like, people, like, love those silly accessories, like the pizza Spider-Man.
Yeah.
It's such an obvious thing to do with Spider-Man, like, just to have, like, that piece of pizza. I think that's why I kind of got the idea, like, with food. It's your characters need to eat. I have like a chimichanga in my first set. That's definitely a nod to Deadpool. I have a gyro, a shawarma. It kind of plays both as a gyro or a shawarma, but, like, the shawarma is definitely a reference to Avengers, something they eat. So that was kind of, like, my idea that, you know, yeah, give them something to eat, have it be fun, have it be kind of colorful. So your figures have something else to play with other than just, like, your generic weapons.
So you've kind of touched on this a little bit already, but you know, with kind of that reasoning behind why your first set was food related, but what goes into the decision making for what accessories you include? Because, I mean, at this point, you've offered quite a wide variety of items, you know, both from, you know, physical things, like tangible items that characters can hold, you know, to blood splatters and what have you.
Yeah, when I started off doing this, I had a bunch of different ideas of things to do. Like, I had a idea to do, like, an office set, you know, because I was coming from the idea of people have these action figures around their desks, either at home or at work. And I was thinking I was going to have to do a set with, like, a laptop computer and, you know, a phone and a desk and everything. But, you know, I also realized, like, I don't know everything about the action figure community. Everyone's got kind of different demands and things that they want to include with their set. So I just took a lot of feedback from people. Like, I was just asked around, say, hey, what else do you want to see? And people are like, we want blood effects, or we want muzzle flares for the guns. Or we want action accessories that kind of simulate movement and punching and kicking and things like that. So a lot of it was really just feedback from other collectors and buyers. Just I was just kind of like, okay, I'm going to give the people what they want. So that's what came about for the my second two sets. And it's just I get a lot of feedback, and then also I like to do a set with a lot of customer feedback, things that people ask for, and then I'll throw in a couple of, like, weird ideas of my own as well.
So what are some of the challenges you come across in designing the different effect pieces?
I talked about a little bit earlier, but like scale is really, really challenging. So 1/12 scale isn't really like accurate. So SH figure arts is probably true 1/12 scale, where 1 foot is 1 inch. But those figures are comparably to what's out there is very it's much smaller. So you put like a figure arts next to a Legends or a like a Storm Collectibles, and you know there's like a 2 inch difference sometimes. So finding that sweet spot that fits both in Hasbro figures and McFarlane and Mezco and a lot of the other lines is a little bit challenging. It really comes down to like literal millimeters sometimes. That's one challenge. Another is like working with sculptors. I have like no artistic background. I'm pretty much a corporate guy. I have like a background in licensing, but I had to like kind of learn how to do this stuff and how to communicate with sculptors from the beginning. And I have like, I can't draw worth a damn. So I'm trying to explain to these sculptors, like what the blood effect I'm trying to go looks like, which is very, very difficult. You're trying to describe what like a blob looks like. And you also have to keep in mind, like the size is right. And the, you need to have kind of like a sticking point because people need to stick it to their figures some way. So describing that to a sculptor was really challenging when I started off, and finding reference images to share with them of blood, believe it or not, is pretty challenging as well to get like what I have in my mind to get an exact image of what that looks like, especially since I can't draw it myself. So that was challenging. Getting level detail and the colors right, that's something I had to learn a lot. So I recognized the first set I did, it was probably too cartoonish, so that worked well with certain lines. Like it would work with some with like Ninja Turtles really well with NECA, but it didn't. But I recognized like the audience wanted something a little more realistic looking, so I needed to kind of up my paint game and make things look a little more realistic. And I got a lot of feedback that people wanted clear accessories so that things pop when you have it under the right lighting conditions. And so that I had to kind of learn a little bit how to figure out like what's the right like Pantone color for the base paint and then the wash or the dry brushing that's needed. And then it's the scale one is really, really challenging. For the coffin, for example, just finding that sweet spot that fits both 7-inch figures, but it's not too big for 6-inch figures was challenging. Like one thing I actually had to deal with, like a couple weeks ago is the factory. There was like a little bit of shrinkage in the mold for the coffin. And it was like just 2 or 3 millimeters off. And like, I was doing some comparisons and it wouldn't fit 7-inch figures perfectly. So we had to like junk the mold and do it again. So little things like that, I want to make sure like the final product, it delivers for what the fans want for the figures. Like you never want to buy a toy and it doesn't accomplish what you wanted it to do. So things like that, working with the factories and making sure that it's done right is really important, because once you finalize a tooling and start using it, it's finalized. You can't go back and fix it.
And it's funny you say that too, because just those. Like I find just across the board, with accessories, having, a collection of McFarlane figures, having, Marvel Legends and, like you said, the SH Figure Arts figures, which are like proper 1/12 scale. There are some accessories, like some types of accessories that are more forgiving than others. Like, certain types of weapons, like the bit, like a big rocket launcher is a big rocket launcher. It kind of doesn't matter, how big it is to a 1/6 versus a 1/12 versus a 7-inch figure, but like something like a small handgun or like a cheeseburger or a donut, like those types of things, like we all kind of have in our heads like what they look like and what they should look like in somebody's hand. So I didn't really think about that until we started having this conversation, how tricky that must be to kind of walk that fine line.
Yeah, like I got a 3D printer just so I could play around. Like we're talking about like modifications on 1 or 2% from a mold. and I'm just kind of printing out constant ones, just kind of see what is the right size that fits for, that hits that sweet spot. So it covers figures that are between like 6 1/4 and 7 inches.
So you mentioned it briefly before, but you have a new pre-order up for a brand new set called the Casket of Cruelty. Love the alliteration, great name. And you know, you did mention that the casket that all the accessories are kind of bundled in can fit a multitude of figures. But tell us a little bit about the set in general.
Yeah. So the Bag of Violence between Bound and Firepower, the Bag of Violence got definitely like a great reception. People are still buying it today. I'm like kind of down to my last couple of cases, which is great. And it's, I got a good reception for that, but then a lot of feedback as well. So people writing to me say, hey, can you do like more guts and stuff like that? I want like a brain. I want eyeballs. I want, you know, I want more gore. And I got kind of feedback for, you know, more different weapons they wanted, more like handheld weapons. So I think one, I'm like, okay, let's expand the blood. I think we can do a little more gore for sure. So I threw in a brain in there. I threw in a heart, a bloody heart, some ripped out eyeballs, a lot more like gratuitous blood effects, things like a gunshot wound, and a crossbow bolt with a little bloody stick at the end. And then I kind of dipped into like the zombie universe in terms of weapons. So, you know, you got to throw in a cricket bat, a crossbow, a riot shield, a nightstick. I got a katana in there with like a swipe effect that can be used with the katana and the set, but also can be used with like a lot of swords. It's actually not a katana, it's a ninjato. But it can be used with like a lot of other swords that you find in other lines. So that swipe effect is usable for, it should fit a lot of swords. I've tested it. So I just want to do more. And then one thing I kind of personally didn't like about my other sets was the packaging. That's kind of just what the factory suggested, and I went with it, but it was like kind of tough to open and there was like waste there. So, you know, I kind of had this idea that, hey, why don't I make like a box that's also an accessory, and the coffin, the casket just kind of worked. So that set, oddly enough, I was working on two other sets, and like the sculpting and design just kind of was taking a while, and I was getting a lot of feedback from the Bag of Violence. Said, okay, I'm going to work on this one separately with another designer. It's a guy named Greenbaum, who is on Instagram. I can share the link. He's an excellent designer. He helped me out with kind of, as I said, like trying to describe what a blood splatter should look like was something that was kind of out of my vocabulary. And he helped a lot with, you know, working with the sculpture and coming up with the colorways. So he was a lot of help in helping design like a lot of the accessories in here. So that's kind of like the, in a nutshell, what the kind of production looked like. And it takes a long time. You know, this is not my full-time job. This is kind of like a side hustle that turned into like something else by itself. There's a lot. I try to pack in as much as possible.
I mean, that's one of the things that's really cool about this set, you know, and frankly, the other ones that you've done is that they're just, you know, there is a variety. And I, you know, personally, I like the kind of pop cultural, you know, touches, like, you know, ever since Shaun of the Dead, you know, a cricket bat has been a, you know, like
a proper zombie.
Yeah.
Right.
Tool, yeah.
Yeah. So seeing that show up in the set.
Zombie defense tool.
Yeah, I mean, it's you got a nice like wide surface area. You get baseball, yeah. It's like a baseball bat, but it's not as difficult to miss with it. So like, you know, but I just like that the thought, you know, went into including something like that in the set. Where like even, you know, years on from Shaun of the Dead, like I said, it's become kind of like a cultural touch point where if you're, you know, talking about weapons, like I know Casey Jones, you know, you got to know what a crumpet is. You know, to play cricket, but
right.
You know, like seeing it with blood splattered on it, I think is Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah, I think a lot of Americans probably couldn't even recognize a cricket bat outside of, you know, like a fraternity. But yeah, it's one of those, that one in particular, that was like one of my, no one was asking for a cricket bat, but I'm like, I gotta throw a cricket bat in there if I'm gonna have a bunch of like zombie defense weapons. But that one was oddly like one of the most difficult ones to stick the scale right. Both because cricket bats come in a lot of different sizes. I think actually you know, like in real life, a cricket bat looks a lot smaller than what you would imagine in for like a zombie movie. So I actually made it a little bit bigger, but I went through so many size iterations with that one. And, you know, also like the angles on it are really, really weird. It's not exactly a paddle. There's like these, it's got one flat side and like kind of a triangular curve at the tip. It's a really wonky shape.
It's so, like a weird, like wedge almost.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a really weird shape. So, the sculptor I was working with, I could tell, you know, is American like us, but you know, that is right for a cricket bat where was pretty difficult to nail down. So that was a lot more, that one accessory was a lot more challenging than I thought it would be.
The other thing that surprises me about the effects as well, is, you know, like you mentioned, you need to kind of work in those design points so that way they can be, you know, attached to a figure, you know, whether it's with sticky tack or, you know, whatever your means is. But I think too, the other thing that people don't talk enough about is the weight of these. And I think it's really important that you're able to keep a lot of these, especially like I can't wait to use the one that's like the vomiting blood, I guess is the most straightforward way to say it. But like one of my favorite effects previously is that one that almost just kind of looks like it works really well for like somebody who's getting punched in the face and like they looks like they're spitting blood.
Yeah,
And it amazed me the first time I went to go use it, you know, just putting a little bit of blue tack and, you know, sticking it to a cheek, that it didn't like flop over because it's so light.
Yeah, that's definitely part of the calculus in designing these things. It's got to be light. It's got to have kind of a flat edge so you can stick it with a little bit of like blue tack. And there's a lot, you know, there's a lot of consideration when making these. Like some of the accessories don't work great, and then some of them I just kind of learned through experience what is like that sweet spot in terms of size and weight and how transparent it is, and you know, all those considerations that go into it.
Now, when we had Ricky from Plunderlings on, we mentioned Plunderlings earlier. He was kind of telling us about, molds and like the type of plastic and like, you know, how to kind of, you know, work out a mold. You use a lot of different types of plastics in these sets, you know, various, more ones are more translucent than others. You know, you have obviously, you know, things like baseball bats and everything. How do you work that out, you know, in terms of just kind of the logistics and making sure that you, you know, you get everything that you need done?
So typically the plastics that are used for these types of things are PVC or ABS. And I really defer a lot of that to the factory to make kind of their best judgment. A lot of it comes down to which material is better for molding that particular piece. So if it's too thin, then it could snap. So sometimes for accessories, you need a little bit of give to it. And other times, like if it's a baseball bat, it can be a little more solid. So I defer more to my factory on that one to kind of figure out which is better for whether it's ABS or PVC, depending on, you know, the thickness of it or what paint is going on it or level of detail. Because we're, you know, these things get pretty small. So I wish that's something I knew more about. I'm still learning that side of it. But yeah, that's pretty much what it comes down to.
As usual, we have a little bit of a Q&A section. We made a post just announcing that today's show was going to be happening. And we got a question in from a friend of the show at Toy Farce. So Toy Farce asks, if there was no copyright or license to worry about, what's one accessory you would love to make?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's luckily right now, it's not something I ever need to think about because I'm intentionally making generic items that kind of fit for all collectors with like kind of different themes. But, you know, if I was going to do like a license set, like one thing I was thinking, I'm not even like a a fan of Fallout. I haven't really played the game that much, but they've got some great weapon designs. That'd be something I think is would be fun to play with. The other one would be like Nintendo. There's so many like iconic accessories from all their different games, from like Zelda and Metroid and Mario Brothers and like Smash Brothers, that I think would be, I think a set like that, which had those accessories for a 6-inch scale, would be hilarious. Because obviously, what do we do with our toys when they can fight each other? So kind of like a Smash Brothers type environment where you had those type of weapons and accessories from your like your iconic Nintendo games would be a lot of fun.
That's one of those things where I've been, especially seeing Jax, produce all the video game figures they've been making, the Mario ones, and they have Legend of Zelda ones coming out, and the Sonic the Hedgehog. Like, the fact that nobody has made like a super articulated Super Smash Brothers line, just all those Nintendo characters, and if they were able to, add some of like the special ones like Ryu and Solid Snake, like that, a line of Super Smash Brothers figures would be absolutely killer.
It's so obvious, right? I mean, like, Nintendo is like notoriously in the licensing world to be extremely selective in who they do business with and what they make. Their number one priority is make good games, and they're obviously great at that. Make good games, make good systems. But unfortunately, they don't put a lot of focus into the consumer product side. And they obviously do have some stuff out there. They have like some great figures with Figma. But yeah, I agree. They could definitely be doing a lot more if they wanted to.
Yeah, like that game is so, talk about cultural touch point. Whether it's video game tournaments, I mean, how many iterations of Super Smash Brothers have there been? And yeah, like accessories, like so many different accessories that you could put with those figures. That would be
right.
That would be unbelievable. Right.
I mean, you talk about like Fortnite, which has three companies making different scales of action figures. And that's in the entertainment world, that's a very new property. Versus like Nintendo, which has been around forever. You have like literally multiple generations growing up on that brand. I'm shocked there's not more action figures and toys out there.
Well, maybe the right person is listening. And we can get a Super Smash Brothers line off the ground. That would be killer.
Yeah.
So every now and then we like to play this game called This or That. We haven't played it in a little bit, but we like to tailor it to two specific episodes for specific guests, and we thought it would be really fun to play a classic accessories edition of This or That. This segment is brought to you by our friends at Chubsy Wubsy Toys. A traditional mom-and-pop toy store in Little Falls, New Jersey, Chubsy Wubsy Toys brings you the best new toys from the brands you love without the hassle of pounding the pavement searching for them at larger retail stores. Visit them in person at 106 Main Street in Little Falls, New Jersey, or online at ChubsyWubsy.com. That's ChubsyWubsy.com. And tell them Adventures in Collecting sent you. So the way that this works is we will give you two options. Dave and I will just switch back and forth of two different accessories throughout the, kind of just the history of action figures. And you tell us which one you would prefer. It's kind of simple. There's no wrong answer. This is all just your opinion.
That's cool. I'm going to make my own criteria then.
All right. Do you want to lay out the criteria before we go?
I mean, when I look at accessories, I kind of look at, is it a word? Photographability, like something that, works, that's got multiple use and accessibility and variety and something that photographs well. I think about that a lot when I look at accessories, things that you can do fun stuff with. But yeah, let's dive in.
All right, Dave, do you want to do the first one?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles weapons tree. Or He-Man's power sword.
Yeah, like He-Man's power sword is definitely iconic looking. It's very OP, but I would probably go with the Ninja Turtles weapons tree just because a lot of fun ninja stuff in there. I wish they had a little more variety in the colors, but yeah, ninja accessories are always fun. Those weapons like got good mileage.
All right, next one. Captain America's shield or a Visionary's hologram?
Yeah, the hologram's a deep cut. Like, that's something I collected way back in the day, and holograms just kind of, like, died after the 80s. But holograms are, the one thing about them is they don't photograph well, just because you don't have that, you know, that 3D effect. So just Captain America. I'm a big Marvel nut, just because that's such an iconic weapon, and there's so much symbolism behind it. You know, I'll always go with Cap's shield.
A lightsaber or Snake Eyes' katana?
Yeah, I don't think there's a competition. Like, lightsaber for sure. From an accessory standpoint, like, it photographs really well when you put lighting behind it. And, like, there's no other, like, OP sword out there more than a lightsaber.
All right, a toilet or a dumpster?
So a toilet's great for humor, but I think from an accessory standpoint, a dumpster just has a lot more versatility. What better way? I mean, when you have like a street scene, a dumpster in the back kind of like sets the mood very easily. And then what better way to show like a character is really like literally down in the dumps when, you know, their back's to a dumpster. That's, you know, I there's a lot more versatility, I think, with they're both good accessories, I would think. But the dumpster is definitely something I would want to make someday as like a case for a future accessory pack.
So, fun fact about that one, quick aside.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's like the old Jax WWE grapple gear question.
It is exactly that. And the reason why I bring it up is because that toilet and that dumpster from those Jax grapple gear figures from whatever year, that had to be, what, 2002, 2003, somewhere around there. I still use those today. Like, in photography, they are two of my favorite. That dirty, half-broken toilet and the dumpster are two of my favorite accessories, I think, that have ever been made, period. Like, they're just so much fun. And, like, to your point, like, you know, you can, I keep the toilet in the dumpster when I'm not using them. Like, they it fits, and I keep other stuff in the dumpster too. But, like, the dumpster is just like the best background thing. It's the best.
That's good feedback, because it's definitely something I want to make someday, but maybe I gotta accelerate that for the next step, because I 3D printed a dumpster, and I use it a lot more than I thought I ever would.
Yeah, I have a background from Diorama Prints that's just like a New York City street, and I can't tell you how many times I've taken pictures of like that New York City street with the dumpster in it. Like, it just immediately brings that diorama to life. And, you know, plus, like, you can open up half the dumpster and have like smoke coming out of it, or like a leg coming out of it or something. You know, it's very versatile.
That thing is spacious too. That thing was made to fit like two wrestlers in. So
yeah. And that's the other thing. You can recreate your WWE Attitude Era dumpster match.
If you want to ever like set the mood for like a filthy alleyway, like, the dumpster's the way to go. Like, the toilet, I 3D printed one. I don't use it as much as I want to, but that one, you need like a little more setting for it. You need to create like a stall, like in bathroom tiles and things like that, to make it really work. You can't just put it on, you know, dirty ground. I guess you could, but it's a little more difficult to build a dirty stall than it is just a street scene with a dumpster. The dumpster just sets the mood immediately.
So, speaking of WWE, we have the WWE title belt or Superman's cape.
I've looked into doing capes and clothing, and it's really tough. It's really tough to get the size right. They're really, especially with capes, they're really hard to photograph because, you know, like, gravity and wrinkles. So I think the title belt actually is more versatile, especially when, you know, again, we're fighting, we're having the characters fight all the time. And, you know, what other way to symbolize victory than the title belt?
I love that answer. I love it. Now, I'm just curious, when you think of super, like, in my head, when I think of Superman's cape, for whatever reason, I think of a Kenner Superpowers, like, C-ring, you know, like, just like on the back of his neck, Superman cape. But like, what cape did you have in your head when you were thinking about it?
that's a thing. Like when I was trying, I was looking into doing soft goods at one point, and it's hard to nail down the cape. One was like this, if it's too long, then, you know, it looks like a kid wearing a blanket. If it's too short, it kind of looks like Batgirl's cape. So getting that size right, yeah, you gotta do like basically do it character by character. You can make Batman has a specific cape. It's got those little kind of pointy things at the end. So you can do a red cape for Superman, but that's not the same as a red cape for Thor. His has like the little, like those circle pin things on the shoulders. So it's really hard. I try to make accessories that are more generic that can be used with as many characters as possible. And by going to soft goods, other than like doing like prison outfits or aprons and things like that for like cooks, capes are tricky. It's really hard to kind of nail down something unless you're making it for a specific figure. And then if you're doing that, I try to go for volume. I try to, you know, if I'm doing just a cape, a red cape, then it's Superman. It doesn't have a logo on it either. So, you know, the audience for that's really small comparatively.
All right, our next one. A barbed wire bat or a crowbar?
So from the zombie standpoint, the barbed wire bat looks better in photography. But kind of like going out of my own rules, like I've given this more thought than I should, but if we're ever in a zombie apocalypse, the crowbar is actually the best thing to have in your arsenal, because one, it's not going to break. Two, you don't run out of ammo. And three, you know, we worry about in a zombie apocalypse that you're going to spend a lot of time fighting zombies, but you're going to spend more time foraging. And a crowbar is absolutely essential if you need to like open up a locked door, break into locked cabinets or refrigerators or whatever. So crowbars, in the real life, in like a zombie apocalypse, you need a crowbar. That's your number one tool. But for photography, the barbed wire bat is just more iconic. You know, Walking Dead is a big part of that, but it's just a cool looking, gruesome weapon.
So the next one is a batarang or a ninja star.
In real life, both weapons are pretty useless. If you've ever tried throwing like a ninja star, like I always think of like that South Park episode where Butters gets it in the eye. But I don't know, like the batarang just looks cooler, I think.
Yeah, so I've never tried, oddly enough, throwing a ninja star, but I have tried throwing a batarang before, like a one with like an edge to it.
Yeah.
And it just clanged against the tree and fell to the ground. Like there was nothing like sexy or impressive about it. It just clanged against the tree and hit the ground.
Yeah, I could barely throw a frisbee, so I could imagine what I would do with either, like someone would get it would end poorly.
Ones from the Nolan movie, like the ones that are really thin and just kind of like they're weighted like a throwing knife, I think those are probably the most practical to date. Like the bigger ones, when it's like big and flat, like a metal frisbee, realistically, you try to throw those things, it's not going anywhere. There's like zero accuracy. But the ones that are like kind of like a throwing dagger, that one actually is a little more practical, I think.
All right, and this is our last one. We've kind of talked about this already a little bit, so we're going to have to come to a decision on it. A baseball bat or a cricket bat?
I love the look of a cricket bat and kind of what that... I'm really excited to see what people do when that accessory gets out, but the baseball bat is just such an iconic, versatile like weapon. I guess the side question from that is aluminum or wood, because I had to think about that myself when I was making the set, which is why I end up with a wooden spiked bat and an aluminum bat in my Bag of Violence set. But the bat has so much use to it, you know, especially when you're talking about, you know, street characters and thugs and things like that. They got to have a baseball bat.
Well, also too, I love that the aluminum bat was in that set, because, you know, as, you know, a wrestling fan, you know, the metal bat, there are a lot of characters that have, over the years, have, you know, kind of adopted that. Most recently, you know, Chris Jericho.
Sting always.
Yeah. So it was nice having a bat. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say, like, you know, I could throw one more in there. Like, you know, steel, like folding chair or a ladder.
I got a folding chair coming up in a future set.
Talk about a segue. So that being the end of the game and the last question, we talked about what you've done so far and your newest stuff. So what do you have in the pipeline? What's coming next for Super Action stuff?
Yeah, that's the fun stuff, is coming up with these ideas and then working on them and trying to work with designers and sculptors and prototyping them. That's the fun part. And then, man, it takes a long time. It takes a really long time to get stuff sculpted just right. And then working with the factory, I know we're in a world where we get like instant fulfillment sometimes, but I don't know about you. I also have a ton of stuff on pre-orders, but it's I've been working on like these sets for probably like a year and a half, 2 years, where I kind of come up with an idea. I kind of filter down all the things I want to include in there. Cause if money was no object, I would put as many things as I possibly could in there. But I always try to make the sets affordable. And I try to make them accessible. Those are like the two tenets of my company, is like, I don't want to overcharge for stuff. I want to have it be around the price of a figure. I want there to be value there. I'm not trying to price it. I'm trying to my best to avoid pricing people out. And I want them available. I don't want them to be like a one-time thing and then, you know, they're sold out in 10 minutes. So I actually overproduce just so that I have a longer period of time to sell things. Cause I do think that they sell through word of mouth more than anything else. But in terms of other sets I'm working on, so I'm probably going to be doing like a smaller set where I'm reusing some of the blood effects. One thing I get asked about a lot is, hey, can you do the blood effects in different colors? And it always eventually gravitates towards, I want alien blood. So I'm definitely going to be doing a green alien blood set after the casket. One thing I got to figure out is what kind of container to put it in. So I'm kind of going back and forth between, do I want like a generic, like wooden, like a gun crate, or something that's more sci-fi? I'm kind of leaning to something like a sci-fi crate, something that's, you know, something you just kind of stick in the background of your Star Wars or sci-fi displays. So I'm probably gonna do something like that, like a little crate with some green blood effects in there. And you know, for some reason the boxing, another set of color boxing gloves will be in there, because that's when I do these things, like on the tool, I kind of had to figure out for each piece of tooling what accessories are gonna go on there when I wanna think about which ones I gotta reuse in the future. So for some reason, I put the boxing gloves on the blood tool. So I'll have a random set of boxing gloves in there. I don't think people are going to complain about having, you know, different variety of colors for boxing gloves.
Yeah, throw in like a black pair of boxing gloves, because then you can have you got a red pair, you got a black pair.
Yeah. So, well, about that. So for the alien one, I'll probably actually do gold pair, because. Another set that I'm working on, and this one's been taking me a long time, but is one that's kind of focused around fun and recess and like play items. So there's going to be sport items there. There's going to be like a basketball, a football, a soccer ball, graffiti cans. There's going to be like a Game Boy, Nintendo Switch type, like portable play console. I'm going to have an acoustic guitar in there. I'm going to have two sets of boxing gloves. So I'm going to have I have the red one coming out for a casket. So I'm going to have a black pair and a green pair, like a lime green. That's evocative of what you think. And I'm going to have, what else? I have like hockey stick in there and hockey puck, two hockey sticks. I'm going to have, what else I'm going to throw in there? The basketball is going to come with a flaming effect, like kind of circa NBA Jam. So if you want to do like a flaming basketball shot or like a flaming soccer kick, that's going to be able to stick on there. Awesome. For that effect.
Very cool.
Actually, let me pull out my prototype, and I'm going to stick everything in an arcade machine. That's something a lot of people have been asking for.
Yeah.
I had a poll a couple weeks ago on kind of like what the arcade machine is going to look like. So I had one designer kind of do like kind of a basic, it looks like a Starfighter vaporwave style. Just so look, it would fit really well with a 80s or 90s arcade. And then the other one is, I'm having someone work on the art as we speak. It's going to be a little bit Marvel versus Capcom-esque, but it's going to be cats with knives. So it's gonna have like different kind of generic, different types of cats, like a ninja with a sword and like a Rambo type character with like a hunting knife. And it's gonna be a little more, it's gonna be a little more goofy. Let's see, what else I have? I have a DSLR camera.
Oh, with a
lens. So that's for the toy photographer. So you can photograph yourself, photographing your toys, photographing smaller toys. The folding chair is going to be in there. I got some headphones, which I've worked with my designer to kind of make it a little more flex. It's kind of got like a rail system so that it can fit on various heads. Because I think that's one of the biggest difficulties with headsets is they can only fit for certain size heads. And we have characters that have a little more hair, it doesn't really work. So the rail system, I think, in theory, it's going to work. It'll be able to have a little more give, so you can work it on a lot of different character head sizes, especially if they have hair. I'm going to have VR goggles, like a VR headset in there, since I got some weird requests for that, and like that's kind of booming. So I thought that'd be kind of fun to do to have your characters playing VR. The spray can is going to have a couple different like spray effects. The vomit was originally made for this set, but I decided to reuse the sculpt for the casket. So I have like our traditional vomit in this set. And I think that's mostly. I have a couple like a dizzy effect.
You should do like a little Bluetooth speaker.
A Bluetooth speaker? A little.
Yeah, because I mean, like a boombox is not really a thing anymore. But like, just thinking, like, you know, if you show up to play soccer or basketball with your friends, like a lot of times, you know, you put a Bluetooth speaker down, yeah, you know, so that way you have music.
Yes, that's an interesting idea. Like, yeah, I know Mezco makes the boomboxes.
Yeah,
they have like a traditional boombox, and then. Or like an 80s, 90s when they have like some more modern looking ones. Bluetooth speaker, that's interesting because it's hard for me to picture what a generic Bluetooth speaker looks like because they kind of look like just, you know, tubes.
Yeah, like a cylinder. That's a good point. That would be tough. Like
or like a rectangle.
Yeah, like the texturing would have to look like that, that almost like mesh.
Right. Yeah, if you can nail the speaker texture, I think that could potentially work. So that's interesting. I'll write that down. I got like a little like filtration mask for the spray painting.
Oh, that's cool.
A little coffee mug. I got a coffee mug and then also like a disposable coffee cup. I think that's everything in the set. This one is a little more fun. Might not be as versatile as like the blood and other effects, but it's another two boxing gloves. So yeah, this one's I really like how the arcade is turning out. I think that's going to be. Unfortunately, like I was working on this, and then Hasbro started doing those Fortnite arcades.
Yeah,
for like $10, but mine's going to look a lot better. It's a lot more sizable and in scale. The Hasbro ones are kind of smaller and flimsier looking.
Yeah, they're a little small, and again, like they're hyper stylized because they're in that Fortnite look. So I mean, they mm-hmm. look very cartoony.
Right, right. And then like one thing I know that people like to do is they want to customize stuff. So I'm gonna once I make it available, I'll open source the dimensions. So if people want to kind of print out their own designs on this, then you know. They can just use those dimensions and they want to make their own Marvel versus Capcom or own art, you know, their own classic arcade thing. They'll have the dimensions and they can make it themselves. I'm sure some people will provide that as a service as well.
And that's awesome.
Like if I can find someone who can figure out how to put lights into it, install it, then I'll open source that design and kind of share that if anyone wants to crack that.
Yeah. I actually just saw, what account was it? I want to say it was at OG Trilogy, who we've mentioned before on the show. He does some really great customizing work. But I think he found somebody that has mapped out the Hasbro arcade cabinets. Yes, it was him. All right, good. So at Kyler Robinson Customs That's
yeah, I know that guy. So the customizer. Yeah.
He has mapped out the arcade cabinets, the Hasbro ones, and it looks like he has Turtles in Time, Galaga, and X-Men. And they look phenomenal. Like it's unbelievable. He's done everything down to like the screen on them to make it look like the game is actually being played. Yeah, stunning work. So I mean, once you get those out there, especially if they're a little bit, you know, if the cabinet's a little bit larger and a little bit more, you know, on scale for most figures, the people are going to eat that up.
Yeah, I'm familiar with his work. The stuff is really phenomenal. I agree. So that's a good idea. I might reach out to him and just say, hey, here's the dimensions for this thing. If you want to kind of make customized like sheets or stickers or whatever you want to modify this, then like let's work together. Let's, you know, you can do your own thing and I can share that along for people who are, they're not happy with the generic cats with knives or the Starfighter designs I have with this, then they can get something from Kyle Robinson and get something customized for whatever game they want it to be.
Hey, or maybe they order two and they want Cats with Knives and a custom one because they're building a little arcade.
That's what I want to see people do, build a little arcade. Have a little arcade set with all their characters. I've seen people do that. People, like, they've either made their own or they've purchased a lot of from customizers, but you know, I wanted to, you know, when I'm talking about like doing these sets, I need a box that kind of works for what people are generally collect. So the arcade one just kind of fit with the whole theme of like fun. Like I've got a lot of gaming systems in there already, so I thought that was that brings the most value to the set. This arcade, I'm really looking forward to seeing how it turns out.
Dave, would you like to fulfill your role as this podcast, James Lipton, and ask our final question?
I sure would. The final question that we ask all of our guests. What is your favorite and or strangest piece in your collection? It can be one of each, or it can be both.
It's a really hard one for me to answer, because there's been so many great... It's a great time to be a toy collector. There's so many great figures that have come out in the past couple of years. And I always like pull one down from my shelf and then, you know, do photography or play with it or just kind of like have it on my desk for like a couple of weeks at a time. The ones I always gravitate back to are the Sentinel Miles Morales is incredible. And I have the Parker one on pre-order. I'm waiting for that one. It's taking a long time to get. But that's definitely a top one. Between like Morales, Popeye, and the Storm Collectibles, Mike Tyson, those three are the Popeye. It's hard to pick from those three. The strangest one I definitely got. I kind of got in a whim. I just saw it on Instagram. Was this? It's a Heath Ledger Joker that's painted up as Ronald McDonald. Have you seen this one before?
Yeah, I have. I have.
Yeah, the figure is like absolute garbage. Like I got it and it fell to pieces like immediately. But it's got all these like weird like Ronald McDonald's accessories and like hamburger and fries. It's just a weird set, but it just looks so funny. The expression on the character is just, it's like the character looks like what am I doing here?
If I recall correctly, it is a bootleg NECA Heath Ledger Joker. From when, right. When they had the DC license for a hot minute there, yeah. And for whatever reason, like it's one of those AliExpress or Alibaba specials where they just packaged it up in McDonald's, like with a couple of food accessories and Ronald McDonald colors, and they sell it alongside the more closely accurately painted version of Heath Ledger's Joker. And it's just one of those things where I don't know if anyone has ever gotten like an actual explanation as to why it exists, but it sure does.
Yeah, it is such a weird figure to make. Someone in Asia is like, we got this Joker mold. What do you want to do with it? Oh, we can do the traditional colors or you can make him look like Ronald McDonald.
Hear me out for a second. I have an idea.
And someone said, okay, let's make 20,000 of them and just throw them up on AliExpress.
Now, what I wish they would have done alongside of that is I wish they would have taken the bootleg Batman and painted him like the Grimace. Because, like, a purple, I mean, there's been a purple Batman because of the NES one, but, like, a purple, like, Grimace Batman.
Or the Burger King King, having to be true rivals.
That would be great, too. See, now there's a market for, well, I mean, it's going to take a little bit more, a little bit more work to paint Christian Bale like the Burger King King. But, yeah, I feel like we need something now. We need something.
There's definitely a market there for crossovers with fast food mascots. I think we're onto here.
Well, Greg, but before we sign off for the evening, remind our listeners where can they find you on the internet and where can they order Super Action Stuff?
Yes, so Super Action Stuff. My Instagram is at Super Action Stuff. I have a store you can buy direct from me on superactionstuff.com. But also, again, like one of my key tenets is I want to make the stuff available. I don't want it to be difficult to find. So you can find my stuff on eBay. You can find it on Etsy. You can find and the my big buyers are Big Bad Toy Store and Entertainment Earth. I also distribute through Diamond Distributors. So that's been great too. I've seen them pop up in the random comic book shop here or there. So. But, you know, if you have access to the internet and you have a shipping address, it's easy to get to me and find my stuff.
Awesome. Well, thank you again so much for joining us on Adventures in Collecting. Cannot wait to see these future sets beyond the casket. And we'll make sure that we put a link in the description below to your website so that people can go straight to it from this episode and pick up some awesome accessories for their figures. Dave. Send us home.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you, dear listener, for hanging out with us today. Subscribe, rate, and review us wherever you listen, and then tell your friends to do it. Thanks also to Joe Azari, the golden voice behind our intro. Our music is Game Boy Horror by the Zombie Dandies. Find more about them both in our show notes.
Follow us on social media at AIC_podcast on Instagram and Twitter. Stop by and say hi, show us your toy hauls, and share your toy stories. Maybe we'll talk about it in a future episode.
Don't try this at home. Void where prohibited and some assembly required. Each sold separately, not a flying toy. Consult a physician if your toy run exceeds more than 4 hours.
This has been a non-productive media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.